Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon, and it's time for a podcast. This week, we are listening to a podcast I pre-recorded with Alex Tiersch. He's CEO of AMSPA, American Medical Spa Association, and this is an awesome podcast. We talked all about entrepreneurship. Did you know that 70% of med spas out there are single owner med spas and 50% of those are brand new in their first 1 to 2 years of practice? That's right. Aesthetics is booming right now. And all of us are trying to get busier and improve our practices. One of the key things we talked about is training, making sure that people have great access to training and education, and caring more about results than money. We also talk about how to make money, how to run your practice, how to run your spa efficiently. He's a lawyer. He knows all the legalities, the things that you need to hear. So tune in to this podcast. We recorded it at the AMSPA meeting in Vegas in September when we were there, and I lectured on their behalf, and I think you'll find amazing tips and pointers. So without further delay, here's our recorded podcast with Alex Tiersch, CEO of AMSPA. The podcast.
Yeah, no, thank you. This is great. We're at kind of live-ish at the Medical Spa Show.
Coming to you live. 2022,
Vegas, the fabulous Wynn Hotel Resort and Casino. And we're just getting started. Dr. Yao, what do you think?
This is beautiful. And I remember being here a year ago. And we were so nervous about coming out in the middle of a pandemic.
Yes.
It's amazing to see so many people here. How many people do you have at this year's AMSPA?
I think last I checked, we had 1,250, 1,260 almost.
That's outstanding.
We've had, you know, obviously with the circumstances, we've had some cancellations, but we've also had some additions. So it's been, I'm telling you, it's crazy. I really think it's nice to be in a place with other people, right? Mm-hmm. It feels good. It feels right.
You need the human energy. We've all had so much virtual teaching, lecturing,
and
webinars, and it's just not the same energy level.
Yeah, and I feel like this, and it's just honestly, our meeting happened in fall at this time, so it's fortuitous more than anything. But everybody is just here, and they're so amped up and excited to be here. And we're only just getting started. We got the 80s party tonight, which is going to be crazy.
And 80s is my decade. I love the 80s.
One of my decades. Yes. One of my decades. But no, I'm so excited. And this is your second year, so I mean, this definitely has a different feel than last year. I think it's bigger. I think it's a little more involved and advanced. I don't know. What do you think?
You know what I love about AMSPA is the vibrance and excitement here. Everybody really understands that this field of aesthetics is exploding with opportunity.
Yeah.
And we need guidance because it is a little bit of the Wild West out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just love, you know, the amazing speakers that you bring that have hands-on, nitty-gritty experience.
Yeah.
Because one interesting statistic from one of your lectures that you told me was 70% of the audience here and 70% of med spas are single-owner practices.
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
It is. And then of the remaining 30%, you know, 20% of those are, you know, 2 to 3 owners. Mm-hmm. There's not big chains. It doesn't exist.
I think in a way that's a beautiful thing that people go into aesthetics because they have single-minded passion for it and they really cultivate very individualized practices that are perfect for their locations.
Yeah.
They attract the kind of clients that they want.
I'm telling you, it's what I find so exciting. One of the things I find exciting about this industry is and I would love, you know, this maybe resonates with you as a doctor, you know, in today's day and age with managed healthcare, hospital systems, all this stuff, this is kind of the last frontier where you can build a brand for yourself. You can really have your own practice. And it's open and you can do whatever you want. You can have a small injectables only. You can do the Taj Mahal of med spas. You can have lots of lasers. You could have no lasers.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that so fascinating that it's just like an open book and you can do what you want, provided you follow the rules and are compliant, because compliance is cool.
It's true. It's the bringing together the artistry of making people happy with their appearance. But it's more than that. It's discovering that little bit of entrepreneurship that you never knew you were an entrepreneur, that you were good at running a business or that you could generate revenue and profit. When you start out in medicine, many of us do, as nurses, mm-hmm. PAs, working in the ER, working in other specialties.
you don't realize that there can be revenue driving your success. And you also don't realize the amount of revenue can be quite profitable in aesthetics if you run your practice well. So that was like, there's always a light bulb moment, I think, for those of us in aesthetics where we really understand like what we're capable to achieve and how can, and then there's that struggle with like, okay, getting your chair busy.
Yeah.
Once your chair is busy, then there's struggle of how do I scale this? Now I'm too busy for myself.
Yeah. Do you remember the light bulb moment for yourself when you were like, you know what, this is what I want to do. Not only that, but it can work.
I do because for many years I started as a facial plastic head and neck surgeon. So I did head and neck surgery with insurance patients. And the more and more I built my aesthetics, the more I started needing to order large quantities of injectables. So I think the first time you put in a $20,000 order and then the next time, and then you're like, wait a minute, I'm dealing with big numbers here. I'm not a little girl anymore.
I know.
I'm an actual woman who can actually generate revenue and I'm having to order $20,000 to $50,000 of inventory.
That's crazy.
This is real money. And then I think that's when my husband and my accountant started taking me seriously too.
Yeah.
They're like, wait a minute. My husband's a very accomplished interventional cardiologist. He runs a CEO of a practice of 30 cardiologists. And he's like, maybe I should retire and join you and run your practice. And I was like, no, I'm going to run my own practice because I know it best.
That's, you know what though? You're right. There's, I remember, I don't remember the exact time, but I do recall with AmSpa, it's like you get to a certain point where the checks you're writing are large and, and you're like, okay, instead of dealing with, you know, $100 increments, you're dealing with $100,000 increments. And you're just like, oh my Lord, what has happened?
You just suddenly explode and you realize like the potential that you can have. And this, I never have been a girl who's motivated by the dollars of this business. And that has kept it a little bit more pure for me and more, more about education and aesthetics and keeping a lifetime patient. And I'd always, you know, discount a product for a patient without telling them it's a discount, but I want them to get the result. I don't need to like hold back. If they need another syringe, I'm giving them that syringe, whatever their budget is, because they need to have a great result with me.
I need some more syringes.
You do? Well, you don't. You look great. Are you doing injectables?
No, I never have. That's not true. I've done one round of Botox, like I want to say 10 years ago. With Sheila Nazarian.
That's it. Next year. The face of AmSpa next year is going to be a live injection demo.
I'm not afraid, although I am afraid. I'm not afraid. I'll do it. It's honestly, I should.
You have great bone structure. You should. You got to maintain. Jawline. I see those chiseled cheeks.
Oh, it's the long hair. I'm telling you. That's what it is. I'm you know, open. My wife gets treatments. So it's, you know, it's not, and certainly everyone that I know does. So
well, I think men are the next big frontier to bring men, you know, into the wellness world.
Do you really think that's going to happen? And I'm not trying to be, you know, cheeky or cynical, but I feel like we've been saying that since I've been in the industry 15 years ago. Men are coming, men. And then it's been the same 10-12% max every year.
It's kind of true, but with this generation that's selfie motivated and the young TikTok generation, the guys bring themselves in, heterosexual, homosexual, whatever their orientation is. It's all about the image you want to convey, and they're getting fuller, sexier lips. They're getting chiseled jawlines. So I'm seeing it at a young age, and I think that that's going to keep moving forward. I think men also want to stay competitive in the job market, and they get brought in by their wives and girlfriends a lot of the time. That's a good starter, but once you get a loyal guy, it's a very easy patient to take care of.
Yeah, that's one of the things that one of the speakers that we have at our boot camps always says that. He's like, once you get a male patient, they do what they're told, they buy what they're told, and
they follow the regimen.
They follow the regimen.
Their skin is automatically better. Did you know men have better skin?
I did not. That's so sexist.
Because they're like, it's not fair, but every day you're kind of dermaplaning a little when you shave, and then you have more hair follicles, which gives more oils to the skin, thicker skin.
I've not clean shaven myself for a long time.
Well,
so
no matter what,
it's
all that hair follicles that give you like that nice supple skin. Yeah, thicker dermis. It's just like not fair. You get more rugged. Women don't look good rugged.
But you guys get to wear makeup.
You can too these days.
I mean, you get to cover all of the, you know, imperfections, and no one knows they're there. We have to go out like au natural into the world, and
I think that's going to change too. I think that male makeup, and the word can't be makeup, but it's got to be male grooming, or, you know, things to soften the male appearance are on the forefront.
Interesting. So of all the kind of trend, whether it's, you know, male wellness, men, whatever it is, what do you think's kind of the next big thing to come to aesthetics?
I'm a big advocate for biohacking and using the potential of the human body to transform and regenerate itself. Mm-hmm. So stem cell therapies, mm-hmm. platelet-rich plasma, using growth factors. You know, I think that all of these biostimulators of collagen production, like PLLA or Sculptra, Radiesse, that's hyperdilute. This is the next frontier. And this is what we should teach patients. We got to avoid the epidemic of pillow face, filler face, things that scare people away from aesthetics.
Yes. I really don't like that. I mean, to each their own, right?
Yes.
You can look how you want to look, but the best injectable is undetectable.
That's a good one.
I read that.
Yeah. No, wait, you need to come out with some AmSpa merch with those cute kind of sayings on it. Yeah,
I think you're right.
Wouldn't that be so cute?
We have one piece of merch, and it's for infants, and it's called a compliance is cool onesie. So for any of you listening who are newly born, we can send you a compliance is cool onesie, and that's it.
I want.
What about you? Do you have any merch? Do you do merch?
Because I teach this course, Modern Aesthetic Theory, so we're coming out with some cute t-shirts and things with that kind of branding on it.
I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
How's that? What you been up to? I mean, how's that been going? Last time we talked, I mean, I remember the first time I met you. I do remember the first time. Like, it was, I was blown away by number one, your presence when you're up on stage speaking. Like, you're an incredible speaker. You have such gravitas and such so much credibility, but you also just have this incredibly massive following on Instagram and TikTok, and I was just like, how the hell did you do this? I mean, what have you been up to? And I know you had the training thing, and that's been going great.
Yeah, that's been going great. Over the pandemic, I'm so proud of our platform, because actually we've been on virtual trainings and online for prior to pandemic. So I kind of feel like we were one of the pioneer groups that's been teaching Modern Aesthetic Theory. It's up to 30 different modules. It includes Threads, Sculptra, Kybella, of course, beginner Botox and fillers, all the off-label areas, things like injectable rhinoplasty that everyone wants. So it's the things your patients want to learn that no one can train about.
Yeah.
And how to do it extremely safely and extremely branded results. So it's thrived. We got so many memberships during the pandemic, and it's gone global, which is wonderful.
That's
all across
awesome.
The planet, people are very secretive in other countries. In Europe, the plastic surgeons don't share. They tend to eat their young and not want to give their techniques up unless they're selling a very expensive product. But I really feel that we should use our educational platforms educationally. Like, I'm on Instagram. I want to give you some value as the patient, the injector. And you don't have to charge for that. You have to show who you are. I love Instagram. I love TikTok. I never would have thought I'd be popular on that. I'm like a nerdy STEMinist. I'm a feminist who's into science, technology, education. You know, I'm a STEMinist. Yes. And an Indian girl who was nerdy growing up, studying so hard, never going out. I didn't party in my college days. But I've just shown.
Sure changed.
Yeah, now I'm making up for that, right? But I feel very proud to show up authentically who I am. I'm not like one of these girls that's got to put on a ton of makeup to show up. I just show people that you can do it if you bust your ass and work really hard. Looks like you're an overnight success. You mentioned this in one of your things today, that everybody's this here so successful. They've been doing it for 10 to 15 years.
Yeah. It was, it was a really interesting conversation, because I didn't think this brand had been around for longer than a few years, and because they're huge, and they're like, we've been doing this for 18 years.
That's what it takes. It truly, truly takes that showing up every single day, giving it all that you have.
Yeah.
That's what's hard about aesthetics, is it's physically demanding to stand on your feet injecting all day. It's a little emotionally demanding, because, you know, you meet 20 people a day. They each have their story and their little bit of drama.
Yeah, you're like a therapist.
A little bit of a therapist. Imagine shaking hands with 20 people at a cocktail party. You'd be freaking exhausted at the end of that cocktail party.
Yeah,
you know? So you give, give, give. You go home a little bit drained. You still got to run a family and a household. So I think being an injector is hard, and having an organization like AmSpa to feed you and nourish you and replenish you and give you what you need to know is so helpful.
Yeah. That's well, I appreciate that.
It's, we need that life coaching and career coaching, and you know,
right? No, it's true. It's I think. I don't wonder if you agree with this. Like, part of it is with Instagram and YouTube and you know, and TikTok and all that. People, you can make yourself look very famous and successful in a very short period of time, and yes. People get the idea. Oh, I can go into aesthetics, and boom, I'm going to be Dr. K in, you know, 16, 18 months. Mm-hmm. And it's, they don't realize the grind. And it's not just you getting into aesthetics; it's everything you did before then as a surgeon, learning the craft. It's like yes. It takes. Time
and it's, I'm pretty grateful that I had those 5 or 10 years of really just focusing on my craft, which was going to the surgery every day, the grind of seeing patients every day without the publicity, without the being flashy or being on Instagram, because that is where you get your solid basis.
Yeah.
And like some people might be discouraged by like getting on Instagram because they're not popular, not big, mm-hmm. but you're the precise person that needs to get on Instagram and show up and show people what you're about on a small intimate level, like open the door to your practice.
It's not always easy though. People do that. Even I, like, just for example, when we did this podcast, the minute I hit record, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just like there's a little something in the back of my head. I'm being recorded, so I'm just like maybe a little bit different than how I would be normally. But then at some point, you know, as you move on, you get over that. So it's not always easy for folks to open up in front of the camera like that. We just mm-hmm. did, by the way, for those of you listening. I did like my first ever professional TikTok with Dr. K.
Amazing. He was amazing.
It was something. But like, that's not easy for me to, I feel like a fool.
It does. You do feel like a fool the first few times you turn on the camera or you watch yourself or you critique yourself. But it's important to not critique yourself.
Do you still feel like a fool when you do stuff like that? Or are you just
no, kinda... I have fun now. And I feel sometimes I'll take things down if I look super dorky. But for the most part, I just let it ride.
You never look super dorky. Come on.
Well, people fixate on like, oh, my hair is not right. My nails, my whatever. But you get your content gets consumed in the flick of a thumb. Do you think people are really perseverating on her bad hair, bad makeup? Yeah. No, they're not. What's coming across is your warmth, your personality. So often mm-hmm. patients have said, I watched you for a year on Instagram and I came in because I love how you are with your patients, how you make them feel. It's a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you're showing a part of yourself, don't you think?
Yeah. No, I 100%.
Like you, like I... Having just seen pictures of you, how would I know that you're such a fun guy and you're so knowledgeable and yet you're like passionate and you got a lot of
dumb in my pictures.
No,
he looks dumb, incredibly.
Like, who's this long haired guy? But I love that you have so much knowledge and background and understanding and passion for you. That comes across when you talk.
Well, you know, it's kind of to what we were saying before. Like, I've been doing in aesthetics in some shape or fashion for, God, 15 years, almost over 15 years. So
what a good industry you landed up in. Did you ever think in law school that you were going to be in aesthetics?
Oh, God, no. Never. Yeah. I thought I was going to be
like... Is there even a specialty of law that focuses on aesthetics?
No, not at all. Huh. Not at all. Honestly, and it's in many ways, it's like aesthetics in general, is that we need more lawyers in aesthetics. And I don't know why it hasn't happened yet, because it's a very... it's a niche market, and... It's very complex,
mm-hmm.
and you need smart people to be able to help decipher and look at this stuff, and nobody does it. I could count on one hand the number of lawyers nationwide that I've met in the past 15 years that have even touched it.
And practices need so much guidance with it. Like, as careful as I am, this week I got a letter about a copyright infringement that some of my interns used a picture somewhere that didn't lie. So like the things that you think that you're watching every little detail and like, oh gosh, you
Isn't
just are
true?
Like, oh, I wish someone could come in and like inspect my office legally and give me a list of all the things I need to fix. That would be such a great service for you.
But yes, I agree. It's impossible because the problem is there's things that, and you know, even with like the copyright infringement, like you'll get letters about stuff that aren't accurate, right? And it's like, how do you fix something that's not true, right? You can't fix a falsity, just like you can't, you know, prove a negative. It's like you can't fix something that you don't know exists because it's false,
right?
So, but I agree with you. I wish there were more. Then again, I don't want there to be more lawyers because we want all the people to come to AmSpa
and get these resources as part of joining.
But I do wish there were more because I think people need to know this stuff.
They do. And then how would you change aesthetics for the next 3 years going forward if you could? If you see some trends starting that you'd want to stop in their tracks, what would you change?
I think there's a perception, and a lot of this probably has to do with social media and reality TV, that getting into aesthetics is easy and doing injectables is easy and you don't need a whole lot of training and you can get a weekend course. And I get these emails all the time, you know, learn injectables, and it's like a day. Right. And that's really, really scary to me, not because I'm necessarily worried about the single patient, although of course I am. It's the ripple effect that that's going to have on the industry when because we need people to come in to be competent injectors. And I think we're just going to get corners are going to be cut, that people are getting trained in ways that they shouldn't be trained. People are doing things they shouldn't be doing.
Yes.
And
outside the scope of their
practice. There's like a great example is dentists, and dentists are very capable anatomists around the mouth. A lot of them are very qualified injectors, but what we're seeing is dentists becoming, you know, quote, medical directors for med spas, which just on its face is a potentially violation of any state law, because you're a medical director of a med spa and you're a dentist.
Yeah.
So you can't do that. You can do things around the face and the mouth, but that's it. And I feel like we're getting, or estheticians are another example. It's like I love estheticians. They're a big part of our business, but they're doing injectables.
That's just crazy to me.
Yeah. So
in Europe is for sure. In England, I know estheticians. Some states, like, is Utah one of them?
No, there's
Colorado,
Texas.
For
you
sure.
can.
Texas.
There's,
yeah.
There's several states where you can, but it doesn't mean you should.
It scares me because the consumer also books their appointment a little bit like they're booking their lashes or their nail appointment or their hair appointment. Like, they kind of just like their beauty. They want to go get their beauty, but I'm sorry, there are lethal complications that can result from this procedure.
Yeah, I think. You know what? Like one of my biggest fears is also something that I think in some ways needs to happen, which is kind of an expose. Something really kind of nasty happens to somebody.
Needs to go down. Yes.
To somebody famous.
It's sadly going to happen.
And then there's a documentary. It's on Netflix. And then next thing you know, and I don't want that to happen because I think, you know, typically the overreaction is to be, now we're going to be shut down in ways that we shouldn't be, but. I think there's got to be some kind of eye-opening epiphany in this industry and people coming into the industry that this is something that we need to get a hold of very soon. And I think it's going to make us stronger if we have, you know, minimum guidelines, right? Minimum standards where people know what the rules are and they can get the training they need.
Yeah, a certification process, like something through the state licensing is going to eventually happen. I'm hopeful that it doesn't happen with someone's sad complication, but the reality is it probably will take someone with a very public bad story and everyone being horrified and a lawmaker deciding to sponsor a bill.
Yeah.
And that's probably what's going to happen. But I think a lot of us in aesthetics are in support of certification and training.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
be horrified if they knew. Yep. The small amount of training that their injector has.
Yeah.
The very small amount of training.
Yes. And the potential consequences for things that could happen, you know, like, for instance, with the Chris Surek's anatomy course that we do with the cadavers, right?
Yes.
There's always at least, and I've seen several of these moments, there's always a moment where someone's injecting into a cadaver and then you dissect in and you see that you hit some sort of a vessel, right?
Yes.
And he calls everyone over and says, look, this is, you know, the artery on the nose or whatever it is. And people are just like, I had no idea that mm-hmm. I was even close to that, right? And mm-hmm. I think the public, if they knew that, they would be a lot more reticent to come in and just treat at anyone. They would need qualifications. Exactly.
The other thing that should be in place, I think, is like emergency mechanisms of care. Like if you're going to provide a filler and maybe do a dangerous or off-label area or even a conventional area, like lip filler is our most common area for lip for occlusions, vascular mm-hmm. occlusions, because we do so much lip filler. But like if you're going to a med spa where the person's working one day every 2 weeks, mm-hmm. are they available that night?
Yeah.
Often not. And I get these messages on Instagram as desperate DMs of like, can you help me? I can't reach my injector. Or the emergency rooms now are seeing patients coming in.
Yeah.
They don't all have Hyalinex or hyaluronidase to dissolve filler. They don't all know what to do with an aesthetic complication.
Right.
So like it, when you sign up for a procedure, are you making sure you're checking if your person's available 24/7 for your emergency?
Yeah.
No patient does that, sadly.
Right. Sadly. No. And I think that it's kind of an industry-wide responsibility for, you know, there's so many places to get trained. And some of them are great. Like there are great, at this conference, I know of, you know, half a dozen to 10 incredible training companies that do things. But then there's a lot of them I know that are just like factories, and they're just bringing people through, training mm-hmm. them over a day or two and saying, okay, you're done. And they leave with this false sense of security that they can go out and start injecting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, I just, to me, that's my biggest fear.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that it's a real opportunity, you know, for us to get kind of a hold of it. And because this industry, I mean, if you're, there's always going to be complications. And I think what's like, you know, as a doctor, you kind of go through your whole career knowing that, dealing with it, learning about it.
Right.
Complications are part of daily life. It happens.
So mm-hmm.
It's not if, it's when.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I don't know that patients know that quite as much when it comes to this. And I think we have a chance to really educate them and lift the entire industry and make mm-hmm. uprising tide lifts all boats.
That's so true. Would you ever sponsor legislation or come up and draft some legislation?
Well, I don't know.
It would be hard because every state is different, but there might be one pivotal.
But what we do now is we don't directly sponsor legislation, but we do have, we do provide input, and we know that there is a very kind of basic baseline that we say, look, this should meet XYZ, you know, and that means, you know, we don't believe that estheticians should be injecting.
Yeah.
Not because we don't like estheticians, but like there's no medical training there.
Yeah.
We believe, so it's RNs and above. We believe, you know, so, and those kinds of things will
say. Some basic tenets.
Just some basic,
and even I think we should ask for industry partnership. Like if you're going to sell a filler, are you going to confirm that this patient, this trainer, this person has training,
or
that
they
have
them?
Hyalinex available in their practice?
Right.
Like, do they have the antidote if you're selling the poison? You know, we need to ask.
Are you going to, when you train the staff of a medical practice, are you going to train whoever they send, including mm-hmm. estheticians, medical assistants for injectables, or are you only going to train?
Yeah, it's important to hold industry to a few standards, too, because they're driven by needing to sell more and more product and broaden their market. And I love that then now they're sponsoring lots of anatomy trainings and things like that. They've realized that they can't grow their market without more injectors. And now there's a scarcity of qualified trained injectors.
Yes.
So, but hand in hand with that is let's make sure that we actually sell product to people that have tools to deal with complications and emergencies.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard one story. I don't know who it was. It was some training center where they had an occlusion or something, and the trainer didn't have hyaluronidase.
Hyaluronidase, really?
Yeah. And so they had to go, one of the people in the class had to go to their clinic and get some to come back and help. And I'm just like, that's irresponsible.
It boggles the mind, but
Well, what about you? What do you think? What are you most looking forward to for the next 3 years? If you were a queen of aesthetics, which you kind of are.
Oh, well. I think I want Instagram to evolve in terms of, because I think it is pivotal to our industry. And I think the content we put out there is affecting young women's psyche and how they overanalyze and critique their own beauty. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to see a little more drive towards natural, long-term aging gracefully and more acceptance of the aging process. Mm-hmm. I think it's damaging for everyone to think that they need to look perfect, like they're filtered, and to not understand that these images are doctored, filtered, and unrealistic. Unrealistic beauty needs to go. And more, using our body's resources to regenerate skin cells and grow collagen, that needs to really improve. And I love the focus on longevity. We're lucky to be now the first generation that's going to live with the average lifespan for women to be like 87.
Wow.
And isn't that crazy? So in the last 20 years, we've added about 10 to 15 years to lifespan. So if we don't start thinking long term, I predict more body maintenance. People are maintaining their faces. Their bodies start to look crepey and older. But I think that, you know, this drive towards like making aesthetic maintenance treatments normal maintenance for the body is important. And just like a little more natural approach and more forgiveness. Like if you can't love yourself at every age, I don't think you're going to be a very happy person.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree with you. Sometimes, though, in my cynical stages, I'm like, is that ever really? I mean, isn't that kind of always been the case? I mean, it's like you look back at magazines, movies. It's always
youth is always glorified, right?
And the it's like,
and every movie model star, is 20.
Like, they're not, nobody looks like that in real life. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many people look like nobody? It's impossible.
But I'll see fabulous examples of aging gracefully and people who've done work and they're transparent. Like Jane Fonda had a few facelifts, had some eyelid surgery, but she looks great.
Yeah.
And like she hasn't lost her essential identity. So I think in aesthetics, what we need to do is make sure that when you look in the mirror, you always look like you're seeing yourself. It's not like your face has degraded to the point you're like, oh my God, I don't even recognize myself anymore. Yeah. You know, I don't feel like myself.
Yeah. To me, and this is unfortunately most more women get treatments than men, so this applies more to women just kind of by the numbers. But women who are aging look better than women who are aging and then are trying to make it look like they've never aged.
Yes, it's so artificial to like.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
You look too desperate that you're trying too hard, and like, it's not working.
What's wrong with being 50, 60 years old?
Exactly.
I mean, it's like going to happen to all of us.
It really is. And I think I want to teach the 20 and 30-year-olds to start being a little more accepting and kinder to themselves.
I thought you just turned 30.
Well, 35. But, you know, what's a few years?
I'm curious, what's too young to start injectable treatments?
Or nothing's any kind of too treatment? Young. Like as a surgeon, like I do rhinoplasties on a 13, 15-year-old, right? Okay. Like people have been getting their noses done for their bat mitzvah since the 80s.
Okay.
Right? Turn 13, you get your nose
done. What about like just Botox and fillers?
I think you start in your 20s as soon as you see some lines. Some people have congenital, frowning, deep glabellar lines.
I do.
Yeah. Starting when you feel that it's eroding your self-esteem. That's the right age. Every time you look in the mirror, you don't see your eyes. You look at that flaw that's bugging you. So I think it's okay to do treatments like this at any age. And I don't discourage my young patients. I've received some criticisms from treating young people on TikTok and 20 and 15, 16. Some of them are independent minors. A lot of them come with their parents, which I think is so refreshing. And the parents and I have a real heart-to-heart discussion. And this is a day and age where you can go anywhere you want at age 15 and get a tattoo, a piercing, shave your head, have a baby. You know, don't tell your mom you're on a birth control pill. So the kids are going to find the place to do it. So if they're wise enough that they found me, a board certified surgeon, and I'm having a talk with their parent and they're comfortable with it, then we're going to do it. And I'm glad that they did the research.
There's some wisdom to that.
Frankly, they can go anywhere and get anything done, and no parent needs to know about it. So I think it's taking some responsibility to do the research and see a qualified person.
Do you think we're going to continue to see that? I mean, we've seen the age of first timers for neurotoxin or whatever, it's just dropping into the 20s. So people are in their 20s are starting to get it. Do you think that's going to continue to happen?
I think so. I think many of the young people these days that make their living from their face and their appearance are very wise to start early preventatively. And this is a generation of beauty achievers. So they want to morph their appearance into the filtered best version of their avatar they want to be. And that is okay, whether they do it with makeup, permanent makeup, tattoos, piercings. Mm-hmm. You can be who you want to be in this life. This mm-hmm. external, you know, meat suit that we wear is not our soul. It's not who we are.
Meat suit.
This body that we is our vehicle for the next 80 years needs to be maintained. Yeah. Every few years it's going to get a full change. And, you know, like, are you never going to repaint your house? No, you've got to maintain. You get weathered, aged. Maybe you change.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay with that. I think that's the human condition. And culturally, like, do we critique people in Africa that put, like, you know, 20 rings around their neck and grow their neck really long? Or
kind of do.
Like all the weird piercings and tattoos we see around the world. Like, there,
I mean, I don't
critique
it.
So much
it,
room for variability in human.
Yeah, like the big
body morphing.
Ear lobes.
The big stretched ear gauges.
I'm not a fan of that.
The pierced columella is like, I'm not a fan either. But
what's a columella?
This little, like, the nose ring piercing.
Yeah, like a bull.
Yeah. So, like, I think it's so important that we don't critique and judge other people's definition of what is beautiful.
Yeah, that's true. I totally agree with that. Yeah. And I don't. People can do whatever the hell they want. You know?
Totally.
It's just you do what you want to do. You have your 35th birthday coming up, like, today or tomorrow, right?
On Monday.
Monday.
January 31st, Age of Aquarius.
Age of Aquarius. That's right. So I just had my birthday too, so I'm an Aquarius also.
Oh, 36?
36. So we're like, that's amazing, approaching our 40s. How do you feel about that?
Good. I decided this year I might acknowledge that I'm actually 52. But
really? That's the first step.
That's the first step, but it's difficult for women to say that because in our culture, when women reach 50, they lose relevance. Like when Cindy Crawford mm-hmm. turned 50, suddenly she handed her throne, stepped off her beauty throne and mm-hmm. gave it to her daughter, who's 20-something. You know, so I think kind of like that tendency for this culture to minimize women as they age and not mm-hmm. like, I want to change that conversation in aesthetics and drive more attention mm-hmm. to the wisdom and knowledge and maturity and like the comfort of knowing who you are and mm-hmm. like being a strong role model for younger women out there.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and I think aesthetics should morph in one more way by being just a little less whitewashed. And when I see the industry and the companies out there, you know, putting up representative models of each different ethnic mm-hmm. color and shape and form, I think that's great. But then when I actually look at the industry and who's running, who's the VP, who's the president, who's in charge of marketing, mm-hmm. like, guess what? There's a lot of vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that definitely needs to change and be more inclusive in terms of, like, everyone wants to look beautiful. Every woman, every race, every gender, every...
But there is, you know, one thing that this is a very female-dominated industry, which is
it truly
which is great.
Yeah.
I mean, we just got to spend some time with Carrie Strom from Allergan, and she mentioned it. It's just this is a female-dominated. All the great brands and med spas are female-owned.
Why is that? That guys don't care how they look. Is it that you don't care how you look, or is it just that you're so busy?
That's probably just a real loaded question. I think has you know, thousands of years of history behind that. It doesn't matter as much for guys.
I think. Like, you know, when a woman looks in the mirror, she tends to focus on that one flaw that's bugging her. But when you look in the mirror, you probably don't. You're probably just like, oh,
I'm just like,
here's my handsome eyes.
Whatever that is
you're like, I'm really busy today. Just got to put some soap on and lotion.
Should I wear a hat or shower? Nah.
It's a whole different mindset. It's how we raise our girls from a very young age with Disney princess mentalities.
Yeah. Well, think of it this way. When you see... And I have seen this before. You see an older woman, say, in her 60s or 50s with a young man, and they're together, mm-hmm. you notice it.
Yes.
But how many times do we see older men with younger women? I mean, it's every
day.
That's
all it is, yeah.
And so, why is that? I mean, so for some reason, and there's way too much for us to get into, for whatever reason, it's this is how it is. And you know, I think changing it is a great goal. I would have no idea how to even start doing that, because this has been, I mean, this is the way it's been for forever.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I don't want to market young men so that they get these insecurities either. Like, oh, you need to have a chiseled jaw. You must have a sculpted cheekbone, you know, otherwise no girls are going to talk to you. But it's that's what we're doing to our women, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it is.
Subliminally and with everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what, I mean, look, we just were talking, you know, women are now, mostly women, not all, but women, again, are driving this industry, getting, you know, Botox and fillers or neurotoxin and fillers in their 20s. Mm-hmm. What is that? What is the message there?
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with having some forehead wrinkles?
It's very true.
I got lots of forehead wrinkles.
Yes.
You could hide pencils in my forehead wrinkles.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. So I think that evolution of thinking needs to come into aesthetics a little bit to teach people that this is about, you do need your self-esteem. You do need to show up for yourself. Like if I don't color my hair, I act older if I have a lot of gray showing. It's just psychologically something about letting yourself go makes you feel crappier. Like we've all felt that during the pandemic. We all let ourselves go for a stretch and it did not feel great.
Yeah.
So something about maintenance is very important for the human psyche. And as much character and intelligence as we have, you still feel great when you have a good hair day. You know?
Yeah.
It's human existence.
No, but it's true. There's people I know who are older women and they've gone gray over the pandemic, right? And they just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And you see them and everyone's like, did you see so-and-so? She's gone gray. And it's like, they look great. Like there's nothing to it, but it's noticeable. When I don't think it would be noticeable if a man did that.
No.
It's the way it works. We've been talking for a while, which is great. But I do have another kind of section I want to get into with you. Do you have time?
Yeah, of course.
You mentioned, regenerative medicine, therapeutics, and in Europe, stem cells. And one of the things that we mentioned on the panel that we were on was in Europe and worldwide, there's a lot more options for injectables, neurotoxins, things like that. I'm curious, is all of that coming here, like with stem cells, for instance, stem cells coming from the legal background, it's very, very controversial in the States, and the level of risk that you're bringing in by doing certain things with stem cells is a lot higher by orders of magnitude than if you were doing it in Europe. So, but I'm curious, is it that much better over there? And is that eventually going to trickle here? And what impact is that going to have?
I think Europe has so much less regulation than the United States, and very little is going to trickle here, because to get any product through the FDA takes 5 years and probably like at least $2 or $3 million, I would think, maybe more. So I think that's going to be a slow process. And unfortunately in Europe, things are so secretive that people say that they're doing stem cells, but are they really? Mm-hmm. Is there any transparency of the process that they're doing, and do the procedures really work? There's a lot of sort of luxury cachet of you're going to see a certain provider, you're going to pay a certain amount of money and do a trendy thing. Mm-hmm. But is there a scientific basis for it? I don't really know. But even in the States now, we are doing stem cell work. When we do mesenchymal, like taking fat and transferring some of the pluripotent cells, we can do that with bone marrow biopsy or even with blood. But again, here too, there's so many people that are doing it fraudulently and deceptively that the consumer needs to have extreme caution.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage anyone who's thinking of stem cell treatments to, the Mayo Clinic has a free service where they'll evaluate your stem cell procedure that you're thinking of getting done and tell you, yes, if it's scientifically accurate or not. So I think that's one of the first starting points, because you can very easily get hoodwinked for $25,000 for a stem cell procedure.
Yeah. What have you seen with some of the work with regenerative medicine and aesthetics, like that's really striking that people should be ready for?
I think starting with the basics, like products that have been out there for 20 years, like Sculptra is one of the best ones for facial foundation building. Mm-hmm. I think it gives you a look of a refreshed, rejuvenated face without a filler face look. Mm-hmm. And so that's something reliable. It can be used everywhere in the body practically. On label, it's just for the face. But off label, I've used it for buttock augmentation, for décolleté, for crepey lines for arms, elbows, thighs, knees, everywhere. So that's one of the best things that turns on youthful collagen, so you no longer have creping tissue paper like grandma's skin. Because that's happening to all of us from sun damage and the ozone layer going away. So I love that. I love the hyperdilute calcium hydroxyapatite or Radiesse, which can also be used in the face, in the body, on label, it's for certain indications for cheeks and contouring. Mm-hmm. But I think that once we use it off label, the potential to improve all the tissues is going to be astronomical. Mm. And this is just the beginning of bioregenerative, like mm-hmm. mixing these things with PRP, mixing with gel fillers, mm-hmm. combining fillers. There's so much research to still be done, but there's mm-hmm. real definitive change in the skin. Mm-hmm. And it's long term. When you grow collagen, it's like when you cut yourself or you get your appendix out, you get a scar. Like, that scar is not going anywhere. It's yours. It's your collagen to keep. So the mm-hmm. the smart consumer is going to stop getting things that they rent for a year, like when your fillers, mm-hmm. you rent it again. And let's mm-hmm. rent to own some collagen. Let's own the collagen.
All right.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, I could talk to you all day.
Oh, my gosh.
We could do like part three, part four.
This is just the beginning.
What's next? What's next for you?
Next for me is just continuing to grow my practice. I want to scale. I want to work more on my passion projects, like my online course, mm-hmm. Modern Aesthetic Theory and Artistry Platform, selling my skincare. We talked mm-hmm. about in one of your presentations, passive income.
Yeah.
I think every injector needs to think of their exit strategy early mm-hmm. on in life, and like, how hard do you want to work? When do you want to retire? How do you want to transition things? I haven't really thought that all through. Mm-hmm. I'm going to work till I'm 90 because I have 4 kids. They got to go to graduate school,
but you're
weddings.
Look phenomenal.
I know. You won't be able to tell. I'll look 50. That's what's next. More hard
work.
No,
you're right. You know what's interesting though? What you said, and this is a big topic of conversation at this year's MSS, and I'm predicting this is going to be a hot topic for years to come, is just the exit strategy. Like, people in aesthetics who have owned their, whether it's a med spa, you know, surgery practice to a med spa, whatever it is, been working so hard, and it's a very, very difficult industry. Like you said, like you mentioned, it's taxing, and we're starting to see exits, people capitalizing and selling their brands for large amounts of money, or even for small amounts of money. But that is starting to happen. So it's out there.
Yeah.
And at some point you got to start thinking about it. Like, is that what you want to do? Do you want to sell? Do you want to hand your practice down to somebody else? Do you want to?
It's so interesting because you guys had a whole day on mergers and acquisitions.
It's
and
very,
like
very
these,
lots of interest.
Lots of dollar. Big companies are out there trying to come buy your brand and take your platform and like run it for you and take away the headache of being a business owner. But that's kind of what we love, is the ability to run our own business and run our own schedule. But
At first.
And then it's all consuming. It is all consuming.
Yeah. So that's really what it comes to. And I'm seeing that more now when, you know, a lot of the folks that I met 6-7 years ago are now, you know, super doing great, but you can just tell they're like, oh man, like I've been doing this for a long time and it's great. I love it. But like, do I want to keep doing this for 30 years, 20 years?
We almost need like a little guidebook of how to scale and what point to scale. Like, you don't scale in year 1, 2, or 3, but probably starting in year 4, 5, 6, need to start thinking of like, are you going to bring on some providers? Yeah. Are you ever going to give yourself a day off or vacation?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
When I see my schedule a little bit slow, I'm like, why are there not enough patients? And then the other half of my brain is like, why am I such a hard boss? Yeah. Like, don't I deserve a little time off?
Totally. And just being able to take time off and literally take time off, which I don't know that I've done for 15, 20 years.
Never.
Like, honestly, just not checking in. When you're your own boss, you never turn it off. You can never turn your brain off.
And now you've built this huge platform in an office, and you're working for your employees, literally.
Yeah.
Like, I'm independent. I don't need to work. I have enough money. Like, I want to go relax, but now I have to work for my employees.
Yeah.
Because I've created all this. And I'm helping support all these families and people that I love. And so it's interesting to see yourself grow and build and like to not even know that you're capable of that success and then to mm-hmm. achieve it. It's a fun.
Yeah.
It's been a journey.
So let's wrap up by, what is your 80s costume going to look like? Are you going to wear a costume first?
Oh my God, I have a sexy dress. Of
really?
Course. Yes.
Is it, did we talk about this already? Is it the flash dance or
the
is
flash
it,
dance look, like the off the shoulder flash dance?
Yes.
Jennifer Beals.
I'm totally wearing the
Did
same
you know
thing.
My staff has not even seen flash dance? We have to have like a sleepover.
Totally believe
you should
that.
Play some movies in the background.
You're actually not a bad. They might be doing that. Yeah, trust me, I know. We half the people that I employ weren't even born yet, and it's just like, what?
That's so funny. We had a student who's a USC film student from film school, has never seen Pretty Woman. Never saw Grease. I was just like, what are they teaching these kids?
Yeah, they're like 80s. Why would we do an 80s party? That's like, did they have color back then? I know. It's but the bulk of this industry, the 80s resonates. Like, I'm telling you, it's going to people
they
are
don't realize
be,
half these TikTok songs are 80s remixes.
They are, totally.
Yes.
Yeah, they don't get it. So I think it's going to be a blast. Well, I look forward to seeing your dress.
Well, thank you.
I'm going to wear the same dress. Hopefully it's not the same. It'll be a little different. That'll be embarrassing if we're in the same
thing. Well,
thanks
for planning such a great conference and having me lecture. It's been a blast.
No, we definitely have to do more together because I love listening to you talk. I think you've got a lot to offer. There's certain people that I continue to think in my mind, we've got to go back and get more from you. And you've got so much to offer. So let's continue to do it. Let's dominate.
Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Thanks
I
for having
love
me
it.
On your podcast. I appreciate it. All right.
I'll do my outro here. Okay. Well, there you guys have it. That is Alex Tiersch. And do you have a private Instagram people should follow you on, or is it just all under
AmSpa? I don't.
AmSpa?
It's all AmSpa. I'm thinking of launching one here.
You
one of these
need
days.
To. I highly recommend.
I mean, I don't know why. I'm a very private person.
Yeah, but your dog pictures, and your cat stories.
That's about as far as I go, though.
You know what? You'd have a following.
I mean, dogs, cats, and Chicago Bulls. It's really about where I go with
that's
my
that's the happiness factor. Well, there you have it, guys. Thank you so much, Alex, for your time amazing conference. I can't wait to see what Aesthetics has in store for us and how you are going to help shape this industry.
Can't wait.
That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y, doing amazing things with people's faces. And my skincare line is Katie Skin. You can find my courses online at Modern Aesthetic Theory and Artistry. That's it for now. Stay beautiful.